St. George's number one station with Washington County's top talk show, The Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Hey, good morning, everybody. 909 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thank you for tuning in this beautiful morning. Got a full crew here today. Mello's over there in the other room and hanging out. And I've got Gil Almquist with me, County Commissioner. If you want to call and make fun of Gil's shirt or something, you're welcome. No, it's a nice shirt, actually. Washington. Yeah.
Good
morning. How come I don't have one of those, Gil?
I can get you one, and you could be a commissioner in every county other than this one.
I don't want to be a commissioner. I have no interest in going through what you go through on a weekly basis.
Yeah, thank you.
So, and Gil has brought a friend with him. Victoria Hales is here. Victoria is an attorney. We won't hold that against you, Victoria.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe explain what Victoria's job is, and then we can let her talk a little bit about it, too.
Sure. Well, the county is often involved in planning and zoning, and of course we have ordinances, and we have codes, and we have all kinds of documents, including general plans and things like that, for the county, not the incorporated cities and
right.
towns. They have their own, but it's still a big job, and we have land issues that are dealing with federal, state, the Chivewitz tribe, and all sorts of things that we have to have some sort of legal representation. And luckily, Victoria, what's it been, a couple of years almost?
Yeah, over two.
Victoria has come here with great experience in land issues and in writing general plans as well as new code, and we certainly need it. And so she came to join the team under Eric Clark, our county attorney, but mm-hmm. she works primarily with the Commission on Land Issues.
Land issues. Okay, we'll get to those in just a minute. Victoria, you worked for the city before?
Yes, I worked for St. George City for 7 years and did the same sort of land use law
okay.
for the city. And we drafted a lot of things there, too, and we're using that experience here with the county.
So it's not like you're new to the area, then. You have some experience here.
Yes.
Very cool. Well, welcome, and thank you for coming on the show today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We know about Gil. Can we learn a little bit about Victoria? Where are you from? Where did you grow up? Where did you go to college?
Well, I went to college at Utah State.
An Aggie.
I'm an Aggie
too. Yeah.
I went to law school at University of Utah, and I've practiced law for decades, and I'm
decades.
Excited.
You're only like 27, aren't you?
No, many decades older than that.
Well, you look great. You look like you're 27, so that's a good thing. Where did you go to high school? Where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from Northern California.
Okay.
So I went to high school at Fairfield High Fairfield, California.
What was their mascot? I'm just curious.
Falcons.
Fairfield Falcons.
Yeah.
We have Clearfield Falcons here in Utah. So
there we go.
Field and Falcon must go together. I guess
yeah.
so.
I left there when I went to Utah State. I haven't
nice.
Been back.
When were you at USU? Do you mind me asking? Because I was there 88, 89, 90, 91.
I'm much older than you. I graduated.
No way.
Yes.
Nuh-uh.
I graduated in 1981.
Wow, no way. There's no way, Gil. Are you kidding? She's closer to your age than mine.
Yeah.
I am.
She's one of those attorneys that is so bright, and it does nothing gets her, and so there's no wrinkles, there's no frowns, there's just, I will win. That is her motto.
I love that. I love that.
I'll figure it out.
Well, one of the reasons, maybe Gil, I'm not going to explain. I'll let you explain. Why did you want to bring Victoria to the show today? What's the issue we're talking about?
In the last couple of weeks, with tourism coming and a lot of mm-hmm. people visiting, and it's warming up, and we have waterfalls, and we have, of course, our Zion National Park, and a lot of other, the boating, the water's getting warm, etc. So those who have short-term rentals uh-oh. Are starting to fill up, and neighbors are starting to complain and mm-hmm. saying, what can you do? Now, granted, municipalities have their own rules and regulations about that, but we have some in the county that are, I wouldn't want to say too much of a thorn in our side because we're trying to regulate, but it's mostly a thorn in the neighbor's side when they advertise. I think one Victoria is 62 people can go in one house.
Wow.
So
wow.
That's why.
So maybe, Victoria, then you can explain to us the law here. Say I live in a regular neighborhood, unincorporated, so we're not talking about like St. George City or Santa Clara City,
right.
unincorporated area. I have a house that is maybe a pretty big house, 3,800 square feet or something like that. I've got 7 bedrooms, and I want to rent that house out. What is the law? How many people can I rent it to? Is there a law? I mean, what is there leeway for me if I want to go short-term rental on that?
So in our county, about a year and a half ago, we passed some reasonable regulations. I know our commissioners don't love regulation, but what we had in the county is we were getting a lot of short-term rental houses that were very big in mm-hmm. our very big, large lot neighborhoods, and they were renting them to 64 people, 62 people, 59
wow.
people. They're filling up a 9-bedroom house with 3 sets of bunk beds. They're putting also pull-out couches in every room. So
And these are right next door to, say, someone who's retired and bought a big house that they just want to live in and
yes.
and have a quiet life and retire. And okay.
So we found a lot of incompatible uses, right, where people are overusing a house as an event center or as a party house next door to a residential house. So the reasonable regulations had a couple requirements. We found that people who owner-occupied their house were more reasonable with their visitors. So we put in an owner-occupancy restriction and a size limit restriction. So if you owner-occupy your house, you can short-term rent your accessory dwelling space. And there are some size limits based on the size of your lot.
Okay.
But if we have a lot of large lots. If you have over 2.5 acres, you can have a 3,500-square-foot short-term rental if you're an owner-occupied house on the same lot. It goes
so
down.
Two houses on the same lot? Is that
yeah,
what you're saying? Okay.
Basically, you could have an accessory dwelling unit that's attached to your house or detached from your house, like above a garage or a separate structure.
Okay.
And you could have a large short-term rental on a large lot. But what we have are some ones that existed prior to that new law that we passed a year and a half ago. And some of those are our biggest problem right now because we don't have a size limit on those. They're existing, so we can't enforce our new regulations against
that grandfathered in kind of thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the legal terms existing nonconforming, we all call it grandfathered in. So we
right.
have some big houses that aren't owner occupied where they're having events every weekend, and those are our biggest regulatory problem and enforcement problem. And the state legislature, to a certain extent, has tied our hands with enforcement on
Uh-oh.
Some of those.
Wait, you're supposed to be on the same team, though, right, Gil?
The idea is that we bring forth issues that affect us here locally, and we have a great team, sometimes referred to as the Sunshine Caucus.
Uh-huh.
And yet they're outnumbered by those who maybe have other interests. But in reality, we are, with the exception of a few other communities, but we are the major vacation location for all of this region, including northern Utah. So we're impacted even greater by the fact that our studies show that on any given day, we have 30,000 people here that
wow.
do not live here, but that are here. So where are they staying? They're staying in these homes, and we just want the legislature to recognize that they can't have it both ways. They can't say that we have to provide affordable housing, and I hope we'll go down that path here in a minute. But we can't do everything that gives so much freedom out that at the same time we are hurting our very economy and those that are just trying to get their foothold here. And short-term rentals hurt that avenue. That yeah, we're on the same team, but we don't often feel like we're running in the same direction.
So there are those out there who say, well, you know what? The government's already overreaching. They shouldn't tell me what I can do with my house or what I should do with my house. There's a group of people that really feel that way. They say,
sure.
you guys keep your nose out of my business. What do you say to those type of people?
We wouldn't want our nose in your business until you reach over the fence to your neighbor
uh-huh.
and punch them in the face.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. I think we're all on the same page there. We don't like regulations. We don't like to have to regulate. But when you're impacting your neighbor, when your use is not compatible with your neighbor, then we do step in and pass some reasonable regulations. And those are to protect the property rights of your neighbor, just like we would protect your property rights. So we're trying to keep that balance. And I think we are trying to hit the sweet spot and have reasonable regulations that are good for your neighbor and good for the community and you.
I think, you know, in representing those people, I think you say, well, yeah, government, stay out of my business until I need you, and then I need you to step in and and help me out. Those that say, you know, government will overstep its bounds or law or whatever in these situations have never been in a real big-time dispute with your neighbor where you need help from the government, from regulations, from zoning laws and things like that.
And we don't want the neighbor, for example, out in Sky Ranch, we've been working ever since I've been a commissioner on trying to regulate or at least try to help mitigate the effects on some of these neighbors. So one of my first trips 4 years ago was out there, and the neighbors
gathered.
You're talking
about Sky Ranch where they have the hangars in their as garages, right, and you can land planes right there and everything?
And part of the problem is that they're under FAA regulations out there as well, and these vacation renters come with all their four-wheelers and side-by-sides and whatnot, and they go out on the runway, and they get into that area, and then, you know, you get all sorts of complaints. And of course, if somebody's trying to land a plane, and you don't want anybody hurt, but where government steps in is where a neighbor has already asked and been denied. Most of the neighbors out there would go over and say, can you keep it down? You know, it's midnight, your music is loud,
right?
And can you not park in front of my house? Tomorrow's trash day, I can't even put my trash cans anywhere. You know, and when you leave, generally, there's a lot of blowing trash and things. And then they get tired of trying to just reasonably work it out.
Especially with a short-term rental.
Yeah, because those
are different people
care.
Every week.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's when they call us. And one lady, bless her heart, she's been battling this because the biggest unit out there is right by her, just gets in tears because she goes, I don't know what to do. Hmm. And I just looked up while we were sitting here. Rent your couch. And it says here.
Rent your couch?
Yeah. It says, hey, if you don't want to go Airbnb, but you want to make up to $1,000 a month, why don't you just rent your couch out for $50 a night? And with that creativity and good customer service, we'll make it work for you. I'm thinking, holy moly, but it shows how you can do it and who to contact. And, you know, at some point, I don't care if I have visitors to come that I've invited. I'm not charging my friends to sleep on my couch. I have a bed for them anyway. But this is the extent that it goes to, from the giant to, hey, rent my couch.
Just I'm trying to think. First of all, I would never do that either, rent my couch out, because you never know who's going to come in, right? I mean, you don't know what to expect. But the other thing is, I guess they're going to operate right all the way as far as you'll let them operate on the fringe of the law, like renting your couch out. Or, you know, there used to be the old rent rig. Now you can rent a car. You can actually privately rent. It's called, I think, Turo is a big one where you can, I want to rent a Corvette. You can go on Turo and find one and rent it out. And it's a private car. It's not a rental company.
And one other aspect, we talked a long time ago about how, you know, 30, 40 years ago, the area saying, hey, we ought to get some golf courses here. Well, the people aren't going to come and golf if we don't have hotels. And so hotels started to spring up. And you've got the Best Western, and you've got all the Whitwers and theirs and the Ince's and those people that started building some of the earliest hotels here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do they feel when they have regulation after regulation after regulation, and not from the county or the cities, but, I mean, state?
Yeah.
And health department and all of that. And plus they have tremendous taxes. It's commercially zoned. How are they feeling about somebody who comes down and rents a couch or even a house for a weekend? So there's a balance there that needs to be struck. And that's why, you know, Victoria and I have been working hard and trying to find that. It's hard to make everyone happy.
Now, you've talked about some of the homeowners that are feeling this exasperation. What about the renters or the owners that are renting these things? Have you gotten pushback from that other side?
Well, we had pushback when we passed the regulations a year and a half ago from the owners who weren't going to qualify as owner-occupied. But again, the ones that existed, we preserved their property rights, and they're existing, non-conforming, grandfathered in, as you called it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem is that when you live in a beautiful area like this, and a lot of areas in Utah that have national parks, we didn't realize that the short-term rental industry would just burgeon. It would just be so big and so overwhelming. And it's a hybrid. It's residential-ish, but it's also commercial-ish.
Yeah.
So it's a hybrid, and it's hard to make it compatible. So you do have to rein it back in so that you can have compatible uses next door to each other. You can have a hotel industry that pays a tax structure as commercial, and what you want is your short-term rentals to be licensed so that they can pay a tax that is equivalent or compatible with a commercial use. Otherwise, it's not fair. It's not fair for our tourists, and it's not fair for our taxpayers.
And before Victoria came on board, which we were so grateful that she did, we also had big corporations with lots of money and from out of state and out of our area that were coming in, and they were screaming the loudest because they were buying up homes and literally just putting them in a giant pool and managing them from afar. Now, granted, they had somebody coming in and vacuuming, changing sheets and getting it ready for the next group.
Right.
But those groups that came out of Vegas and California were big corporations saying, how dare you? Well, what we're trying to say is, how dare you? You know, you're coming into a neighborhood that has residential feel and you're turning it into a hotel.
You have this big giant, I don't know, I was going to say juggling, but it's really more one big giant ball in the air that you're trying to control. Is that ball headed in one direction? Are you just trying to guide it so that eventually we will arrive at one destination? Or are we still going to have to, there's going to be multiple regulations and rules and laws to manage it? Is there ever going to be like one finite answer? This is it. This is the way they all are going to be.
Well, I think we passed the regulations and we're waiting to see how it works. I think it has worked in the sense that we don't have a lot of people applying for new licenses that don't meet the criteria now. So we haven't had many complaints about the ones that are operating under the new licensing system, the new size system, and the new owner occupancy requirements. The ones we're really struggling with are enforcement against the grandfathered in ones.
Right.
And all of them have to use and obey. Obey isn't quite the right word, but they have to comply with the good neighbor policy. And the good neighbor policy it's the golden rule. Treat the people next door to you as you would want to be treated yourself. And no big events, no parties. And those are the real hard things to enforce. Trash, parking, health and safety issues that affect all of us, like sewer sizes. Houses aren't built to house 62 people every week.
Right.
Their sewer sizes are based on bedroom numbers, but not necessarily occupancy numbers. If you overstack the house with occupants, you're going to make the sewer system fail. So our regulations are very health and safety oriented, very practical oriented, and very much trying to keep the compatibility of the commercial use, the short-term rental use, with the neighbor's use, which is a residential use.
I think, you know, I originally, when you were talking about this, I'm thinking like a retired person, but actually there's probably people that have to get up for work. I mean, if you're on vacation and you don't care that it's Tuesday night or Thursday night or whatever, you're on vacation, you're going to stay up late, you're going to sit in the hot tub. Those that imbibe in, you know, whatever beverages they imbibe in, they're going to be up late. Partying, I guess, is the word. Meanwhile, next door neighbor here, I have to be to work at 5 a.m. Some people have to be to work at 7 or at 8 or at 9. They do care about that stuff. So I can see a major, you know, headbutting going on in this whole arena that you get to deal with, I guess, Gil.
Well, in one of the homes out in Hurricane, by Hurricane Sky Ranch, the dad, the husband worked early. He left early. He's a contractor. And he would park his truck down in behind the house where they had a garage down below and his shop. And the short-term rental people were savvy enough that they didn't park in front of their driveway. But he had a gravel driveway by the side of his house, and he couldn't get out.
They trapped him in.
He said, a lot of words, some interesting language, and he went over to that house at 5 in the morning, and he rousted them all up to find out who had parked in front of his way to get to work.
Talk about a conflict of goals there.
Yeah.
They want to stay up late partying, he wants to get up early and go to work, the road is blocked, and guess who's getting up early?
I think our goal is to level the playing field. We still need the legislature to let us find out who's doing this. And so far they've blocked us from looking online I just looked at one place up for renting a couch, right?
Yeah.
I could find out who it is and the address and tax them. Now,
you don't know if it's VRBO or if it's...
It's getting better, but no, we don't.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's tough. As a lawyer, what are you supposed to do if you can't find these people?
Well, you can use the websites to find them. You can't use them for enforcement. So you'd have to go a step further. You'd have to actually, I don't know, try to rent it, try to talk to them, send them a letter that says, hey, you can't do that. But you can't enforce based on their advertisement on an Airbnb site or other platform. And the next thing that's coming is just what Gil mentioned. The CEO of Airbnb has stated publicly in numerous current news articles that his next push is for room rentals inside people's homes.
Yeah.
It's called room stay or room share. And so each house is being monetized by these Airbnb platforms and other websites. And they don't care about our locality. They care about being a tech billionaire.
Profitability.
Yeah.
And out of the same people's mouths come, we need to help the homeless. We need to help those who are deprived of a reasonable rent or all of that.
Yeah.
It comes out of the same mouth. The hypocrite side of them is massive with a big H. So like Victoria said, if it's money driven by them, they don't care about their social stance because it generally is in opposition to itself.
Well, it seems like to me, as hard as it is enforcing some of these regulations on houses now, when you're talking about, I have two bedrooms in my house. I'm incorporated St. George City, so it doesn't necessarily apply to you guys, but I guess I'm empty nester now. My kids have moved out. I could rent out those bedrooms. How in the world is anybody going to enforce that? I still live there. That sounds like a tough job, you guys.
It is tough.
All right, let's get a commercial break and a weather break in here on the Andy Griffin Show. Victoria Hales, Gil Almquist are here from Washington County. Commissioner Almquist, if you want to call and yell at him, it's always fun. He'll yell back. No, not really. The phone number is 673-5890, and you can text me anytime at 435-467-5842. Guys, we'll be right back. Hang in there.
Punching holes in the liberal agenda. It's the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU. Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in today. By the way, I had a nice dinner with my dad. His birthday was yesterday, 88
Sweet.
Years old. My dad still Good going job. Strong. You think, I said this yesterday on the show, you think 88 would be like frail, like he's a little wafer thin, frail, wind blow you. No, he's a big, big, strong, hearty guy at 88 years old, still going strong. So, and I know my dad's a big fan of Gil Almquist, too. Thinks he's a pretty good guy. So,
well, give him my best.
And another guy makes me think of this. Did you know Emerson Carnivale? You know
yes,
Emerson? Yeah, Emerson's a good friend of mine. I was a neighbor of his for a couple of years, 6 or 7 years actually, out there in Washington City. So
yeah, he's super.
Another good guy. And yeah. He's like an area representative now for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So
yeah,
cool deal here. I couldn't think of a more perfect fit for someone.
When we had meetings together, I always tried to sit by him because I felt like I left smarter and kinder. And
exactly, yeah, exactly. First time I met Emerson, there was a flood. They live right below the water park in Washington City, and we hadn't had a good rain. And the first good rain came since they had moved in, and somehow the water park, all the water was funneling right into his yard from the dog park. But did I say water park? Dog park, anyway,
park.
Right above him. And so his unfortunate properties became a lake, including the inside of his home. And so we rallied as a neighborhood together and tried to get all the water out of there. But that was the first time I met him. Must have been, gosh, 15 years ago, something like that. So
great guy.
But yeah, great guy. Gail, thanks for coming on. Also, Victoria Hales is here, attorney at law, but also about 20 years younger than she says she is. So I don't know that I believe you about all that, those dates, because you look way younger than that. But thank you for coming, Victoria. Appreciate it. If you want to call and talk to Gil or Victoria, 673-5890 is the phone number. You can text me at 435-467-5842. Let's talk a little bit about affordable housing. Now, what does that mean to you, Gil, and how does that apply with what we're talking about?
Well, I believe that when I first moved here, 1982, in a permanent way.
Okay.
I looked for affordable housing. Yeah. Right down on Bluff Street here, we found a place we could afford. It was $340 a month.
Wow.
Little town home to rent.
You can't get a car payment for that now.
Yeah, exactly. And I felt like we fit into the neighborhood. We had other choices, but there aren't very many choices now. And the state has actually mandated to the county and to cities, but primarily what we deal with on the county level, is we have to have a plan for affordable housing. But it's not the same as Salt Lake County or Utah County. We are very remote in our rural areas, and those which are, of course, unincorporated, where we deal with. So what do you want to do? Put, you know, 100 units of affordable housing in Viveo? That means they have to have
sense.
A car,
yeah,
or some public transportation. It's not, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So we're struggling right now to find language that will satisfy the state in what we can do for affordable housing. And part of the problem, too, is where we do have zoning that might accommodate it, the neighbors really don't want it for all the real or unreal fears that they have.
Sure.
So we throw ourselves right in the mix of wanting something and trying to comply, and fighting off the neighbors who fear that everyone is going to be a criminal or something, and it's just
dealer,
not true,
yeah.
But it's their perception.
Well, you know, if you drive down South Telegraph now through Washington City and you look at all the apartments that have been built now, I think a lot of people are making that assumption. Oh man, we got low cost, and they're not really that cheap. But low cost housing, you have a lower class of people. You have drug dealers and people that are stealing things. And I mean, that's the perception that people have when they see these apartments. I think Kenny Nielsen, when he was mayor, took a lot of heat because he was kind of one of the first ones in Washington City to say, all right, let's build some of these apartments. And now we have some in downtown St. George. And like you said, in different parts of the county, the state is telling you, you've got to build these kinds of places. So it's an interesting challenge because you guys are told one thing, but you got your citizens telling you something else, and you have to try to make it fit, a square peg in a round hole.
We have a lot of homes that are short-term rentals that could have a long-term family living in them.
Mm.
But the money's not there for long-term, so why do it?
And so let me ask you this. If I own a house, let's just say I own a 3,000-square-foot house in the county somewhere, short-term rental, how hard is it to keep it full enough to make my rent? The perception is I can make a lot of money short-term rental. Is that true?
I think it varies. I think that some operators who are good at it can make money. I think people who try to do it on an ad hoc basis don't realize how hard it is and how hard it is to keep renters in there and keep them happy. I think that we want all those accessory dwelling areas to be used for long-term rentals, or more of them to be used for long-term rentals. So people who are students, people who are young families, older empty nesters can have a place to live long term.
Yeah.
So I think there's money to be made there, and it's probably easier to make money there than it is in a short-term rental setting. And we strongly encourage accessory dwelling units to be long-term rented. We really think that's one affordable housing answer.
But at this point, you can't make them.
Right. It's marketing and management is where you make your money, and if somebody's savvy enough to make a nice place, they can make some money off of it. But there's a lot of people that try short-term rental and realize, gee, where did that the toaster go? I'm sure we had a toaster here. Where's that stain in the carpet? You know what I mean? And even with long-term rental.
Why is the garage door broken now? What's going on?
It's management is critical, especially like you talked about in Washington, those big units. Somehow you have to be able to manage what's going on even in those lesser income. I'm not saying low income, but
lesser
the housing. So,
all right, got a couple of callers on hold. You ready to take it? Here we go. Let's go to Oscar on line one. Oscar, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Are you there? Oscar, line one. Doesn't sound like he's there. Well, we'll try line two and see if we can get back to Oscar. All right, we'll go to line two, and I believe this is Dave. Are you there, Dave?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a question for the commissioner. This is the topic of the county clerk debate last night. So I understand the commissioner was there. Is that correct?
I was there, yes.
Okay. I looked online for a while. I didn't actually attend it in person. But of the opening statements, and I haven't gone through the entire presentation yet, I will. Three of the five personnel in the opening statements talked about some kind of election reform, either doing audits, getting rid of machines, cleaning up voter rolls, etc. So what's your position on this?
Well, we've just purchased a machine that we actually budgeted for because it was hard for us to single out a precinct or even a single race. And it was very difficult for somebody to come back in and say, well, let's look at those precincts and actually hand count those ballots. Obviously within the guidelines that the state provides. But now we can do that. That machine was actually delivered just yesterday. So once those come in, if we have a close race like we did a couple, 16 months ago or so, then we can go back in and say, did the machines actually get it right? It's a good way to audit that. But certainly one of them, who's right now filling in the position of Susan Lewis, who retired. I know a lot of people say, she just quit. She couldn't take the heat in the kitchen. No, excuse me, listeners. Her husband retired. He could from the library system. And they're building a house closer to family in Enoch on some family property they've had. Always a long time dream. And finally she said, all right, husband, you retire, I'll retire. So it had nothing to do with any other pressures that some people say, we are lucky. We got rid of her, all right, you know. So to answer your question, though, where is my position on that? We track every ballot. And we only mail ballots to people who have legitimate signatures that we have on file. And when those ballots are mailed in, you can still get a personal ballot by just coming to the election office and saying, I want to vote in person. And that's fine. You can do that too. Nobody gets two ballots. When one person might say, oh, I got three ballots. Well, you know, that's because you moved or something happened, but you only get to use one of them. So nationally, people say, oh, we're all messed up in this country. And to a certain degree, I agree with that. Here locally, we've seen what the nation has done, and we don't cook that soup here. And so, quite frankly, you need to understand that when people just scream at the top of their lungs, fraud, 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 liar, 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 cheat, 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 there's going to be people who believe in that. And then you get these people that go on tour that make thousands and thousands of dollars per visit just spouting their contrived numerical algorithms that make it sound like the sky is falling. But most of these people, when they look over their shoulder here locally and they say, thousands of people are joining me because this is all corrupt, and they look over their shoulder and they see 20 people back there, I'll tell you, the most people that call me say, I love what we do here. I love how you track it. I love how you delete names of those who are deceased. I love how you track residential addresses. I love what you do is far, far outnumbers those that are out there saying that everything is corrupt. I don't know where you personally stand, but I can tell you that we're doing it right here, and we're not going to let people cheat.
Well, I think it speaks volumes that three of the five brought up either people don't trust the elections here or they have some questions about the validity. So I think you need to be open to some of the other initiatives.
We have been open. In fact, we were the ones who went to the legislature and got 11 bills passed. They all came out of Washington County, by the way, because we were listening to them. So for somebody to say just because I have an opinion doesn't mean I don't listen to somebody else, that's bogus. I listen to everybody, and I take serious their opinion. But when they tell me that Nye County does a hand count, and I call the clerk at Nye County and said, well, we kind of do, but not the way they described it. Or when they say Shasta County in California does a total hand count, and I call Shasta County and they say, no, we got our wings clipped by the Attorney General in California because that's not true. And then when they say France does a hand count, and I talk to everybody about it, and including finding out exactly how they do ballots in France, that's also bogus. So yes, I do listen, and I follow up, and I check on them. Last night somebody said every clerk I've talked to in the state says that they want to go back to hand count and get rid of the mail-in ballot, which by the way, I have already started calling those clerks in this state, and that is a lie. So I want you to know, I do listen. We do say that 3 out of 5, you know, but had some concerns with that. Well, a lot of people do. I have a concern with that. That's why we're doing a good job. But just because you run for office and you say the majority of us think this is wrong doesn't mean that it's wrong. So I'm sorry you feel that way, but the truth is, come down, watch, come with me. We'll walk through the whole process together, you and I, and even we'll do it in an election, and we'll take care of that.
Well, thanks for the invite, Commissioner. But I do, last point, I do think when the you referenced the election with Willie Billings in your comments, and that was the opportunity, I think, for the county to take the extra step that they didn't do. So I think that weighs on a lot of people's minds.
Oh, sure it does. Sure it does. I never mentioned that election. I never said that name. You did. But I can tell you that was the catalyst for a lot of these people thinking it was wrong and corrupt. And we did what the state required us to do because I think we still live in a country that follows laws. And we did what we were supposed to do in an audit. And by the way, those that were in the room, I was there too, when we hand counted. Well, we verified, audited the actual ballots with what the machines counted. Even the two that were hand counting right there at the time came up with different numbers, and they were sitting in the same room. So I'm with you. We're going to do a great job here, and the proof is in the pudding. You'll just have to come with me, and we'll work it together. And if there's concerns that you and I see, believe me, we'll be hand in hand up the legislature fixing it.
Awesome. Thanks for the call. Got to take a commercial break. Be right back. Hey, welcome back. County Commissioner Gil Almquist is with me here on the Andy Griffin Show, as well as County Attorney, one of the county attorneys, Victoria Hales. Victoria, thanks for coming. Gil?
Thank you.
Good to have you on the show. We're going to try again to get Oscar on line one. Oscar, are you there this time?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. What's on your mind today?
Okay. I've got a question more along property taxes. I found out for the last 10 years, I've been overpaying property tax, and the assessor acknowledged that I had overpaid, and for some reason, my house was listed as a second home, which I've never moved, I've never had a second home, and so we were paying for, it was coming out of the escrow of the mortgage, and without no, and, but she says there's no recourse. Do you know of anything that we can do?
We do have some. We do have a way that we can look back, not very far. So as soon as someone catches it, generally there's a year that we can fix it.
Well, yeah, she did catch it, and she acknowledged that indeed we had been overpaying. Yeah.
And I can honestly
for 10 years.
Yeah, and I can honestly tell you, Oscar, I'm sickened by the fact that most people that have this sort of go through escrow, et cetera, there's no reason that the escrow company hunts this down or fixes it. But I have looked back, and in every case where I've seen these, then I'm sickened by it. I would be sick if it were me. And because people refinance sometimes and they're not caught during the signing of escrow papers, you know how that is. They throw 100 papers in front of you and you don't know what to read all the time. And so they don't catch it, you don't catch it, and all of a sudden you're paying an exorbitant amount of tax over than what you should for a second home when it's really your primary residence. But I did look back on all the tax notices, and sure enough, and we're moving to make this big and bold and a colored lettering that says what you are, if it says primary or non-primary. Now, most people don't know what that means, and I hate that because they go, right. Ah, primary, non-primary, what? You know, my kids are in Sunday school now. You know, whatever you want to say. But my point is that we're going to try and clear that up, meaning if it says non-primary, that means you are paying a higher tax. If it's primary, you are living in the home, and that should be lowered, and you should get the advantage. It kills me, though, that I can't go back and fix those other 9 years. But for whoever...
Can it be retroactive or something in future taxes? She acknowledged that it was a 45%
yes.
more.
Wow.
You should be paying 45% less now every year here and out. But I would make sure that you look and make sure when you get your next tax notice, you know, there's going to be a pre-tax notice, a preliminary that you get, that you make sure that it says on there that this is your primary residence. And believe me, Oscar, why don't you come visit with me sometime and we can just walk through it and commiserate a little bit together, because I've done that same thing on car insurance and health insurance and all sorts of things where I've overpaid and I just hate it.
Right. I mean, where it comes out of your escrow, you don't ever look. We've
yeah.
never refinanced. We've never moved. We've never had any reason for it to change. That's why I don't understand why it would have.
Yeah.
I mean, why.
And I know Andy's got a short stop here, but I do yeah. want you to know that we've talked with escrow companies. We're trying to get the word out through appraisers and escrow agents and all those that they need to be more clear about what the tax says.
All right. So it looks like I'm not the only one.
No, but there's not very many, but we're catching them one at a time and fixing them. And sometimes dozens at a time.
All right. Thank you,
Thank
Oscar.
You, Oscar.
Appreciate you calling. Yeah, it doesn't sound like there's a lot you can do about the past on those, darn it.
Yeah, I hate that.
But if we can at the very least catch them so that yeah. in the future they're fixed. I can't even imagine, you know, I've lived in my home now for 4 years. I can't even imagine finding out, you know, now, oh, by the way, you've been paying the second home price on the taxes
yeah.
Because we don't think you're the primary resident. I'm like, well, but I don't have another house. This is it.
And what we're trying to do, too, is find the cheaters that say this is their primary home and they actually live in Salt Lake.
Mm.
So
what's the law? What's the requirement? How much time? Is it 6 months? Or
it's 183 days is the cutoff. So half the year, basically.
Okay. Yeah.
So technically, you can't have two, right?
You're
either in 183 and one, which is exactly just barely over half, or you're 182 and the other 180, whatever, and you can't do both. So, okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep, and, you know, on the clerk auditor's race, yeah, you're done. I realize we've got 10
seconds.
We got
a minute and a half,
well,
so you're good.
One thing that this is probably the most critical time that we get the right person in as clerk auditor. It's critical.
For sure, yeah.
And that means elections. That means getting the tax rate exact, because this is, if you look on your tax notice, your tax rate goes out to the thousandths of a decimal. And so we need to really get that right, because it means millions of dollars. And like Oscar, he's paying too much. Well, if we don't get that right, then suddenly we don't collect enough, or we don't have the right numbers for our cities or our communities that also tax. And that could be millions of dollars that's a shortfall. And then suddenly all of this falls apart. So that's an auditor responsibility. But some have been saying, hey, well, you know, the one that's being put up and supported by the put into that position to help when Susan Lewis left was handpicked. No, we went all over the community and tried to get the word out. Private assessors, private accountants, do anybody that wants to come on in and apply to run. And so good luck to all of the candidates, but it's a very critical time to get someone with experience.
Victoria, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Gil, as always, it's been a pleasure.
You're great. Thank you, Andy.
Andy Griffin Show on KDXU tomorrow. It's a new month. Chris Saley is going to join me. We'll talk to you then.